Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 271 for comics originally released on October 17th, 2012. Now, starting us off in DC is Catwoman 13. This is one of the prologues to Death of the Family, or A Death of the Family, depending what you read where. Now, you were going to get this, but you had problems getting this, correct?
Correct. I had not pre-ordered it, and I normally can just go into my comic shop on Saturday, which is now when I normally go in, and pick up any book, you know, that we're going to talk about that I didn't have. And when I went in on Saturday to pick up Catwoman, I was told that it had sold out on Wednesday. The very day that it came out by mid-afternoon. And upon talking to them, it turns out that the previous week, Batgirl number 13 also sold out on Wednesday. And these are the part of that Death of the Family crossover, and I guess some of the lower circulation books. And I don't think the shops anticipated the demand. And I don't know if it was just that it was a Batman crossover, or it's because they've got that kind of overlay with the Joker mask on them and people thought that was kind of cool and wanted to collect all of them, or I don't know what the exact deal was, but when I went online and looked for these things, I mean, they're on eBay and various places for like, you know, 15, 18 bucks. I mean, that's what people are asking for them. I don't know who exactly is buying them, but boy, if I had a copy of one of these books, I'd be really tempted if someone was willing to give me 15 bucks for it to sell it, because historically that kind of demand and pricing for a book does not hold in the long term.
Oh, it barely holds in the short term sometimes. Yeah. It'll hold for a couple of months,
yeah,
maybe.
I mean, I would say within, at the outside, 6 to 9 months from now, you know, those will be back down maybe in the $5-6 range, and I would suspect that, you know, 5 years from now they'll be the same price as, you know, most of the other books in that range.
Yeah, they'll be a little bit higher, but you're right. The crazy prices now will go away. Now, I've got mixed feelings on kind of that Joker overlay on the covers, because they, of course, did that with Batgirl and Batman 13, and I'm assuming on some of the others, too. And frankly, you know, you flip that over and you get kind of that half face of the character, and I find that actually to be a more striking cover than the Joker, you know, overlay with the cutout for the eye and stuff. So, I mean, I think the Joker overlay is drawing a lot of people to the books, and that may be why it sold out and surprised a couple of retailers that way. But again, I'd have been just as happy with it without that. I thought that was a striking cover gimmick without the overlay.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, what was strange to me was I thought it would have been better had, instead of all the overlays, been all like kind of maybe little minor variations on that Joker face to be the, you know, Batman and the Catwoman and the Batgirl, like you're saying. But as the, you know, if they wanted to have that kind of masky kind of overlay, have it be the character in the book and not all the Joker. Maybe put the Joker picture on the inside.
Well, or on the inside of that overlay, do the other half of the character.
Yeah, yeah.
So you flip it open and you get the full face.
Yeah.
I think that could have been cool too. So, I mean, it's a gimmick, but, you know, obviously it seems to be working for them. Now, this was the first issue that Ann Nesenti wrote, so I was kind of curious how it was going to go. And frankly, I think you kind of lucked out by not being able to find it, to be honest.
Didn't really miss too much.
This is
what
one
I get
that,
from that.
Yeah, it in a lot of respects didn't really click with me. We get, you know, some opening stuff. We get a flashback to, you know, some early stuff. And then we get a couple of pages that just have some really kind of over-stylized page layouts that are a little surrealistic. And, you know, when at one point Catwoman says, the caption, presumably for Catwoman, you know, someone's mucking with my mind. And I'm thinking, like, have you been drugged? Are you hallucinating? Because it kind of looks that way. And there are aspects of those pages and, frankly, a few pages later on, after we see Catwoman's new digs and a few things, where I thought the storytelling was just kind of unclear. You know, particularly those three pages with the layouts early on, I wasn't totally clear what was supposed to be going on, and frankly, I didn't really care. We get to kind of the heist part later on, and there are a few things that just didn't make sense to me. There's a bit of a chess motif going on here, and the size of the chess pieces compared to what was supposed to be in them didn't quite seem to work for me. And the duration of the actual heist or whatever took 4 or 5 pages, and frankly should have been something that it felt long and drawn out, and the pacing seemed off. And the big thing I took out of this was, just for me, I was not favorably impressed with the way the story was executed. And I don't know how much of that was the writing, how much of that was the art, how much of it was a combination of that, but it just, it fell flat for me in a couple of areas. It also felt a little light in terms of the amount of story we got in this issue. It was heavy on setup, light on payoff, and there were one or two things that we were kind of, you know, promised in the solicitation, such as the true origin of Selina Kyle being revealed, which, one, I didn't see it in here, and two, shouldn't we have just gotten that in the Zero issue?
Seemed like it would have been the appropriate place for it. Now, I didn't read Catwoman Zero, so I don't know. What did they cover in Catwoman Zero, if not that?
They covered, you know, her backstory and stuff, whether it was the true origin of Selina Kyle. I mean, give them a few years, I'm sure we'll have a few more. It just seemed like they were kind of almost at cross purposes with themselves, if you know what I mean, in terms of what they were trying to do here. And there was one or two of the minor tidbits on the art just drove me nuts. She had this, I guess, like wire or rope or something she needed for the heist, and it was just incredibly huge, not huge, it was very thin and wiry, but there was just so much of it that it kind of had, you know how like at times Spider-Man's web gets all busy and noisy and stuff like that? This had a little bit of that, but not like threading around the main spider web kind of a deal. It was just, it seemed like she had her equipment for the heist kind of chaotically stored versus coiled up nicely or whatever. It seemed messy. And the way she was using it just seemed a little ridiculous in times. So I would hazard to guess, had you gotten this, I don't think you would have been overly impressed. I don't think you would have liked it, and I certainly don't think you would have stuck around for the next issue.
Well, then, it's like, I don't feel bad. I mean, I was going to buy it, and it's like, even if, you know, it had been, you know, available online for like a regular price or something, although, you know, people were saying, oh, you can get the digital. I just have a real problem with paying full price for a digital comic. I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't mind digital comics, but I just don't think it should be the same cost as a physical copy of something. You know, it should be less.
Well, and if you get it through DCBS, and obviously in this case you did not, you would have paid $1.79 for the comic versus the $2.99 initial cover price, or even if you'd waited a month, the $1.99.
Exactly. And, you know, that's the thing. It's like, if I can get a discounted price from a retailer of a physical copy of this book for less than, you know, it's just like, I don't get what the deal is there. I mean, that tells me that someone is making a lot of money these digital comics, and it's probably not the creators.
There are two reasons the prices are the way they are for the digital comics. One, they need to maintain price parity. If it was much cheaper to get it digitally, they would run the risk of people abandoning the print, going to digital, without necessarily having a big enough revenue stream there to kind of have neither side be able to pay for the content creation and kind of undercut their own sales. It would also alienate the retailers. That would be bad for the publishers. The other reason is, sure, there's no printing involved, but there is distribution. When these things go out, in this case, Catwoman 13 in particular, it's going through the DC Comics app, which is run by Comixology, going through the iTunes store, you know, among other things, I believe, both of which get a slice of the pie. So not all of the cover price is going to DC. They've got to pay those other two venues, which
is... No, and I understand. It's just, you know, for people sitting back and letting, you know, the program that they wrote do all the work, you know, they're getting as big a slice of pie as people who have to physically move this thing around, you know, pay overhead on stores and, you know, trucking companies and all these kinds of things, you know. This just seems to be something a little off there to me. But I understand the first part of the reasoning, which is it really has to be this much because we don't want to, you know, cheese off the comic shops for having them be cheaper and have people migrate to digital and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit more to it than just the people sitting back and letting the program, you know, do its thing. There is the maintenance cost, the upkeep cost, the bandwidth cost, the overhead. Granted, you're right. It should be a lot less.
Overhead should not be as much as the overhead of physically shipping physical books all around the country. If it is, they're doing something really inefficiently.
Well, I mean, you ship the books the once, they've got to keep those servers up 24/7. So it's different. And in some cases, it's cheaper. In other cases, it's a longer-term cost they've got to cover as well. But in either case, part of why I have not bought much in the way of digital comics is that same thing. I'd rather pay for something tangible than just bits, particularly when I can get the tangible cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of thing shakes out over time. For me, Catwoman 13, I'm really kind of on that edge of, do I give it a 2, do I give it a 3? And I think I'm going to have to give it the 2. There were just enough things that didn't work for me that, you know, I can't just say, yeah, it was an average comic. I thought it was below average. And frankly, I was a bit surprised by that. I expected Nocenti to, frankly, do a better job on the writing. But, you know, that's how it was, at least for me. Obviously, there are going to be some people who love it, others who aren't reading it and wouldn't with a 10-foot pole anyway. So, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sure. Marvel right. Now, point one.
Yeah. Now, this is another one of the kind of point one specials. They've done one or two in the past. And in this particular case, it is kind of promoing or teasing half a dozen different titles that are upcoming. We've got FF number one, Secret Avengers number one, Young Avengers number one, Nova number one, Cable and X-Force number one, and Guardians of the Galaxy number zero. Now, one story that was kind of interspersed throughout was the lead-in to Secret Avengers, and that was the story dealing with the new Nick Fury, which I thought was good, but just kind of cryptic. You know, it was more framing sequence than story.
Yeah.
And what little story we got with this guy from the future, frankly, it irritated me a little more than I liked it. I mean, I liked the art, I liked some of the execution of it, but the visitor from the future himself, useless. He never seemed to have anything tangible or substantial to say.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get the Star-Lord, I guess prequel would be the best way to say it or whatever, and I don't really know that we need to get into his backstory and stuff. I mean, I liked it, it was good, but it seemed like an odd thing for them to decide that that's what they wanted to do, and I can't tell if that's going to be just for the Zero issue, or if we're going to get the adventures of young Star-Lord.
I'm guessing that, you know, they'll be jumping forward or maybe doing something. I don't know. I mean, because it's a prequel for Guardians of the Galaxy, so one would assume that Star-Lord and that's not going to be this little kid. You know, maybe they'll have some flashbacks to how he grew up and became who he is or whatnot. I mean, the art was really nice. The thing that worries me, just because of his history, is, you know, Steve McNiven on the art to anything.
Yeah.
You know, on a monthly book, even taking away the inevitable double shipping, is who is going to be the fill-in artist every other month. Now, on one hand, it's probably better to have a fill-in artist every two issues than to just get, you know, three issues a year or something, you know, waiting for Steve McNiven to draw the books. But, you know, that could go many different ways. You know, like, well, Daredevil, I think they keep artists that have similar styles. So, yeah. You know, there's a relatively consistent feel to that book, even though there's a rotating team of artists.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, though, because if what we have here is kind of a flashback to the early days, the childhood of Star-Lord and stuff, which is probably not going to be standard fare for the Guardians of the Galaxy series, and we've got McNiven, who we don't think can hold the penciling down on a regular series every issue and stuff. Therefore, it too may not be indicative of the regular quality of the book. It makes this seem like a really odd choice to kind of use as a promo or a teaser or a launch pad or springboard or whatever for that series. I mean, it's good, I liked it, but is it representative of what we're going to get?
Right.
Now, the next feature we had was Nova. And this is clearly not Richard Rider, but some young kid is a new Nova. A kid Nova is kind of how I was thinking of him. And it was just a bit too cartoony for me. And
I'm not a person. I mean, a lot of people really love Ed McGuinness's art. I think Ed McGuinness's art has been morphing to this style over time. I'm not a particular fan of his current art style. That's not a knock against his art style. It's just a statement of how my taste and his art style, you know, intersect with one another. You know, if you love Ed McGuinness's art, you will love this. I mean, for me, I cannot see myself reading this book.
I did not get filled with great confidence in the future of a Nova title based on this. I mean, I thought it was okay. The art, again, a little too cartoony. This kid seemed really young.
They draw him like he's like 12 or something.
I mean,
just like the size of him. I mean, maybe it's just because this Diamond Head guy is like really huge or something, but just the proportions on his body and how slender he is and his arms and everything. I mean, he's really drawn like he's an 11 or 12 year old kid as opposed to a teenager. Unless he's like just like a really, really wimpy teenager or something.
Well, if he's a teenager, it's like 13 or 14. It's the young end of the scale. And I question how well this is going to click with the audience if this is indicative of what the title's going to be like. And it's saying that he's going to be a member of the Avengers and stuff. And that just seems like an odd fit, too. So we'll see what happens with this character. It looks like it'll be a good all-ages title, and I'm looking forward to that aspect. But I didn't have enough here to really sell me on the concept, but, you know, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, now the next story is the first one that instilled me with happiness, you know, as, wow, I'm really looking forward to that series, and that was the Young Avengers one by McKelvey and Gillen. You know, that one, or Kieran Gillen writing and Jamie McKelvey art with Mike Norton on the backgrounds. That story, I liked the story. I really liked the art. That one clicked for me. Now, Young Avengers, based on the strength of that team, is one of the titles that I had chosen to be pre-ordering for the Marvel Now. And this story made me happy that I had made that decision. Had I not made that decision, I would have been adding this to my pull, but this is already on my pull, and I'm looking at it and saying, wow, this looks good. I'm looking forward to seeing more of this.
Yeah, this was the one that I thought knocked it out of the park. I mean, I love the art, I enjoyed the story, and I'm really looking forward to this. You know, the breaking of the fourth wall and stuff in the one-page ad they did kind of thing actually worked kind of well. That's something that might have turned me off or whatever if it was done poorly. But that's just they've got a great creative team on that. They used the page as well. I think that has a chance of being a very strong title for Marvel.
I like even on a few of the pages, he did a very nice job on, like on the job where Miss America picks up Kid Loki, and you know, the panel layout and design on that page, I thought that was really nicely done.
Well, particularly when she slams him down.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some really cool stuff there. They were very dynamic pages. The pages, you know, characters broke the border when they should have, not when they shouldn't have. It was not just standard fare. It was, again, exceptionally well done. Now, the Ant-Man stuff, I got kind of mixed feelings on. Stature's dead. Ant-Man's back. That happened not too long ago. And this is Mike Allred art. And he's got a very pronounced style. He's a great artist, but it's one that his style is so pronounced that I can't help but see so much of it while I'm reading the story.
Oh, I absolutely agree. You either like his style or you don't. And if you, it's kind of like McGuinness in that, you know, if you don't like this style, it's going to cause a problem.
It's not even a question of me liking it or not liking it, but me, I continually notice it.
I felt the same. I agree with you, but I felt the same way on the McGinnis story. I mean, I continually noticed the style on that one. Now, the Ant-Man story, for me, I like Mike Allred's art. It wasn't the actual art that caused me the main challenge on this one. I really was not a big fan of this story.
Yeah, the story was a little weak. There are a few things, like the vehicle Ant-Man was using, that just didn't quite make sense to me. And it seemed like a weak story to kind of, again, launch that new FF series. I mean, it was a cute story, but not amazing. It was okay. This is the kind of thing that all of these should just be knocking it out of the park. And yeah, so far, of the ones we've talked about, one did.
Yeah, I actually ordered the first issue of Fantastic Four and FF, and I did not order beyond the first issue of those. If the first issue of FF does not impress me significantly more than this story, I will not be coming back for a second issue of FF.
I can understand that. What about the Cable and X-Force story? What'd you think of that?
You know, that's that one. I did not care for the art on that one. The story, you know, I didn't quite seem like a whole lot happened in that story.
That's a fair assessment. I would agree with that. I mean, to me, this is something that would be a hard sell for you just 6 ways to Sunday. You're not an X-Men fan any way, shape, or form, and this is a heavy X book. And we got Cable, we got Forge here. It's unclear if this is going to be representative of what's in the series or not. My guess is kind of not. This is him, you know, this is a recruitment story.
I was almost saying, was that Forge? I mean, because he's like all kind of hairy and headband, and it's like, I don't read that much X-Men. I kind of know Forge fixes things and stuff, but this does not. He looked all skinny and didn't really look like I remember Forge looking any last time that I read anything with Forge. So
it gives the impression Forge has been kind of homeless and kind of crazy for a little while. I thought it was okay. I think the way they show Cable there at the end, that has me a little intrigued. This is something that, you know, I'm a fan of the X books. I'll pick this up. I'm sure I'll like it. Based on these pages, if I were on a budget, would I have picked it up? Well, I mean, that to me sums up the book. This was a teaser for half a dozen upcoming titles. It should probably not have been priced at the $5.99, but at some promotional pricing to where it's like everybody would pick this up. And it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. And if I were on a budget and I'd spent $5.99 on this, that'd make me kind of going into this a little, you know, it's like, why am I paying so much for this if you want to sell me on some books? It'd make me a harder sell. And based on what we get here, I'd probably only get Young Avengers and Secret Avengers. But I probably would have gotten them anyways, because again, the creative teams look pretty good. And frankly, this is the sort of thing that, particularly having paid $6 to sample 6 titles and get pretty short samples of them.
Oh, you're getting like 8 pages for $1, you know? That's, you know, which is about, that's about right. You know, you get, that's about, you know, for each $3, you get like a comic's worth.
True. And if I got a full story in any of these,
yeah,
which, you know, maybe for the Ant-Man, but this is something that they're using it as a marketing vehicle, and therefore I shouldn't necessarily feel like I should pay full price for that. And I think some people are going to come out of this being more put off on some of the titles than sold on some of the titles. I mean, fortunately, I'm not on a tight comic budget by any stretch of the imagination. I'm going to get all 6 of these titles. But as far as getting me excited, getting me amped up about it, they did that with Young Avengers. Kind of sort of did that with the Secret Avengers, but the others not so much.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I had already ordered the Young Avengers. Okay. I, based on this, had I not already pre-ordered FF number 1, I would absolutely not have ordered FF number 1 after having read this. I will not be ordering Nova after reading this story. I wasn't going to get X-Men Legacy regardless. So that was kind of a no-op.
Cable and X-Force.
Or Cable and X-Force, yeah, sorry. And the Secret Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy looked interesting enough based on this that I will try out the first issues of those series. They haven't been solicited yet, right, either of them?
No, I think they're in the next batch because they're not until February.
Yeah. So I will try those out. But to your point, if this is, you know, and not even if, I mean, this is theoretically the, you know, they're trying to sell these books. And if this is what they've got to offer, you know, if this is them putting their best foot forward on some of these things, that makes me a little leery about what I'm going to actually get in the titles. I feel that way a lot of times about first issues. You know, it's like, you know, first issue is supposed to sell you on a series and get you really excited to be coming back for more. And I kind of look at some of these first issues that we review and it's like, yeah, that's the best you can do. Why are you publishing this?
Yeah. Well, what gets me is we'd already seen a couple of pages of the Ant-Man story in the Marvel Now preview catalog thing, whatever that was. That was the Marvel Now previews number one, where they had just a couple of pages from a whole slew of titles and stuff. That was free. So to get that for free and then to get this for $6, and I'm not saying they shouldn't have charged for this or whatever, but it's going to be disappointing, I think, to a lot of people if this turns out to be the first six pages or six pages of some of those other titles.
Oh yeah, that would be absolutely terrible. I mean, these had better be number zero kind of prequel things. If they use these pages again in the actual issues, that would be a very bad thing.
Now, the solicit said that these six all-new tales combined to tell one earth-shattering story.
I didn't get that feeling at all.
Yeah, I didn't get that at all. I'm curious to see how the Marvel Now stuff pans out for them. I am cautiously consumeristic. How about that? I mean, I'm going to be getting this stuff. At this point, it doesn't seem to be lighting the world on fire, but it doesn't seem to be tanking yet either. But I think Marvel's got a lot riding on it. We'll see how it goes. To me, this was a 3 out of 5. I thought it had some decent stuff. On a technical, like you said, price per page thing, it was on par with other things. It just, I would have liked to have been more wowed by these six upcoming titles than I generally was, and I would have liked to have been more impressed with Marvel really backing their play by promotionally pricing this.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. You know, to me, it was a 3 out of 5. And that's, you know, if I was rating these things individually, it would be very different. But as $5.99 package, this was absolutely middle of the road.
I think we can both probably agree that the Young Avengers, that was a 5 out of 5.
Oh, absolutely. The Young Avengers, I am very excited to see that Young Avengers series come out. That looks like it's going to be just fabulous.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our other book of the week, which is Cyberforce number 1?
Sure. Now, Cyberforce, there was a Kickstarter campaign that helped them pay for this by offering up variant covers of the various books and potentially, you know, at some of the higher levels, a hardcover collection and, you know, some other things. So this Cyberforce, I don't remember if it's the first 4 issues or what, but they're theoretically free. You know, that doesn't mean that they're free to your comic shop, kind of like Free Comic Book Day comics. The store does pay a nominal price for each issue, but it's meant to be given away promotionally. And there are also, you know, like 1 in 100, I think, or maybe 1 in 50. I'm not exactly sure.
I think they're more like 1 in 10, 1 in 20, or whatever.
Right, but they have some of the higher ones also.
You will, but for the price the store pays, they need to get, I think, I forget exactly how many copies, but there's a set amount, and they get some variant incentive versions for the 25 cents or whatever a copy they pay for the regular, and the idea would be that they could charge $10 or $15 for those, which would then cover the cost of what the store is paying for these free copies of the regular issue.
Right, right.
So, I mean, they're trying to be fair. They're trying to not lose their shirt on the printing, trying to make sure the stores don't say, well, I'll take a billion of them or something crazy like that. The one thing that surprised me with the cover of this, nowhere on the cover, and I got cover A of the regular edition, nowhere on the cover does it blatantly say, hey, I'm free.
True.
seems like a missed opportunity. I'm sure it was intentional, though, in case some store wanted to mark it up or
charge
put it in the back issue
or
bin
or something. Or, yeah, whatever.
This was one that I thought had a decent story. It seems to be set in a near future and not the present day like Cyberforce kind of used to be. It focused heavily on Velocity, which makes sense. I mean, she was one of the more popular characters of the group, enough so to get her own miniseries. She might have even had her own short-lived series for a bit. It was, overall, it was a good issue, but I'm kind of glad it was free, or at least nearly free to retailers, because it isn't that I wouldn't have paid for it, but they didn't knock it out of the park, in my opinion. And, you know, $2.99, so yeah, I'd have been okay with it. $3.99, I'd been thinking, well, I don't know, you know, a little overpriced. The fact that the price is off the table made it a lot easier to enjoy. And I think it'll get better acceptance that way. But I am going to be curious as to how it does by that fifth issue.
Yeah.
Because it'll really be determined based on interest, not on, you know, cost justification or anything.
Yeah. Now, to me, I really like the art. I thought that the art, which is Coy Pham and Sal Regla. Coy is doing the penciling. Sal Regla is the inker. I really liked the art. Had kind of a Kenneth Rocafort feel a little bit. The art was very nice. What I think was somewhat of a missed opportunity, especially as a free issue, you're relaunching Cyberforce. It seemed relatively cryptic and did a pretty poor job of introducing the situation and the characters of this world. You know, there was a lot of use of, and I didn't read a lot of previous incarnations of Cyberforce, but it just seemed like they used a lot of jargon of, you know, like names of things that you're kind of supposed to potentially know what the heck they're talking about, and I didn't.
Such as?
I'm trying to look for them. Like, some of the names of some of these creatures.
Well, there was the Shocks.
Yeah, the Shocks. So that was one of them. So I'm kind of like figuring out what they are, you know, I guess. But what's the deal with that? I mean, you're in some kind of a future world, you know. It seems like when you're kind of setting up a future world like this, you should, for a first issue, do a little bit of, you know, stage setting. And it's another way of going about telling a story where you're just, you know, keeping all that mysterious and letting people figure it out as they go along.
Do you think it was a good idea for them to start the story with one set of captions that became pretty clear quickly that it was Velocity, but another set of captions that it took quite a ways into the story to really understand, now who the hell is doing that narration?
No, I didn't think that was wise at all, nor do I... I'm not also a big fan of the, you know, fading in on the unconscious character and, you know, not knowing what's going on. I would have thought that the first couple of pages could have done a little definition of the world and the setting that we're in, and then cut to Velocity kind of waking up or whatever in what appears to be some stagnant water.
Starting with her in a disoriented state kind of started us in that same disoriented state. And for something that, like you said, is relaunching the franchise, the property, whatever you want to call it, that seemed like a questionable decision. If we'd come out of this issue very clear on the new status quo and, you know, feeling like we'd gotten a really strong start to the story, I think that would have worked a lot better. This felt like a lot of setup versus a lot of establishment, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Establishment, you would also get some payoff. The story would have solidly started. We would be engrossed and in depth and in the world and entrenched in it. Whereas here, I think we're still trying to almost find our footing.
Well, like, for instance, like about halfway into the story, you know, they are, when they get into Pittsburgh, they have the page with the, you know, I don't really understand how, but it starts with there being too many people on the planet. You know, it'll be like a million things, and and they're going on, you know, maybe some scene setting, some variation of that could have been used to kick off the story. And, you know, even with some of the stuff with Aphrodite, again, it seems like they're relying on people having some kind of familiarity with these characters and situations. And I'm sure they all know it really well, but it's not the best way to sell someone on something that's new.
Well, go to the page before the staple. We're getting some of the backstory on how the world got so messed up. We've got what appears to be kind of the UN chamber there. There's a couple things up on the big screens. And we see a close-up of it on the bottom of that left yep. page there. We got like a stock market thing with the stock market plummeting. Below that, we've got water with a not sign. So it's like, okay, we're out of water. Stocks are crashing. Then the other four images, we got a pi symbol. It's like suddenly math. Is...
I don't know what that is. The other one, middle top one, is like all different religious symbols. So it's something to do with religions. You got kind of like a UN symbol on the bottom right. I don't know what the open, empty
that's
hands
all states,
is.
That's open hands, right?
Well, maybe that's implying like, you know, lack of food to go with the lack of water. But, you know, it's kind of like, give us a caption or something. Think about what's going on here.
Well,
you know,
particularly since these are being shown to the entire UN, presumably to explain something. We got two things. It's like, okay, I get that. And the other four, it's like, huh? That was one of those issues.
And even that, I don't think that the graph, you know, I mean, gold stocks have
lagged gold all year.
Yeah.
That didn't quite make sense either.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what that means. You know, so... I don't know. I mean, it was an okay story. And given that it was free and it's going to be free or, you know, a nominal amount of money for several more issues, I'll read them and they've got a chance to like try to draw me into this world. But I have to be frank. I mean, had I paid $2.99 for this issue, I would not have come back for issue number two.
At $2.99, I might have. At $3.99, I probably would not have. I don't know if I would have pre-ordered them or not. I mean, it's funny because it's a free book. They've got the opportunity to do the slow burn in terms of the reader's finances, whether that's a viable option or not, you know, for the publisher finances is another matter entirely. And the question comes out of this, is this gonna reposition Cyberforce to where they could do an ongoing after this, or will it turn into an ongoing? Yeah. What is their kind of exit strategy on this? I mean, I think it's great that Top Cow is experimenting with crowdfunding using Kickstarter, giving the comics to retailers for a nominal fee to again cover some printing costs and also make sure retailers don't go crazy in the ordering, yet still giving the retailers the incentive copy. They're trying to play fair and stuff. But if you're going to do that, you want to have something out of it that you firmly, you know, kind of hooked people. I mean, you've got, what is it, five issues or whatever to hook the readers. At yeah. no cost to the readers.
So here's the other, like another one. I'm flipping through this. Okay, on the second to the last page.
Okay.
I count four series three, one retrofit upgraded series two, and one series four there. The rest are various low-level betas mixed with a few humans. Well, I'm assuming those are series of cyborgs or robots.
They talked about the series stuff earlier in the yeah. book. They mentioned that Heatwave was a series three, and Cyberblade
right,
was
not,
those.
Not defining exactly what those mean. And to my point is that at the back of this book, they're got a couple of pages of black and white kind of sketchy art from, you know, a future issue. I think that it would have been far better served had they taken those two pages and put like kind of a, you know, like a one-page text piece on, like, the background of the world, since it wasn't in the story. You know, here's the deal, right?
Yeah.
And then the other page, like, kind of a glossary of here's all these wacky terms we're using, and, you know, here's what a Series 2 cyborg, this is what that entails, and here's this, and here's that. And had they put a couple of pages of text there in the back to kind of help us along, you know, then I could have said, well, I'm a little bit confused. Then I would have got to the end there. So, oh, let me read this. And then I could have said, oh, okay. And then gone back and re-looked at the issue. And I think it would have made the entire issue a far more fulfilling issue had they done that.
I mean,
it
would have
been even better had they incorporated some of that stuff into the actual story. But lacking that, at least having that as text material at the back would have been a good thing to do.
Yeah, because then it would have seemed like they were at least trying to make sure we were informed and understanding of what was going on. As it was, again, it wasn't bad. I would consider it, frankly, a 3 out of 5 comic. Yeah. It was average in terms of the content. Obviously, the pricing I was pleased with. Whether the people who paid, you know, whatever they paid on the Kickstarter stuff are as pleased, I don't know.
So I did the Kickstarter, so I'm going to get some exclusive variant covers and a hardcover. We'll see. I mean, I'm not getting them until the last issues are out. They'll ship them all at once.
But hopefully there are no delays.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be like limited covers because there's, you know, something like, I don't know, like 500 people or something that backed the Kickstarter. So that's all of those variant covers that there'll be. So
were you listed in those back pages?
Yeah, I'm on the...
I skimmed them. I did not read through all of them.
Second page, second column from the left, about a third of the way down. There's 3 of us in a row. You got me and then Sean Neprud and Joe Davidson, all guys from the show, listeners. You know, Sean does the Valiant, Only the Valiant podcast, and Joe sends in clips on the preview show.
Ah, there you guys are. Yeah.
So, you know, we all backed it. And it's, you know, and like I said, I mean, I don't mind backing something like this because I think it's a good experiment. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, these are the things that, you know, they did miss an opportunity here to, you know, there were a couple of simple things that they could have done to make this just stand out a little more. But again, given that it's going to be free for 4 issues, they do have 3 more issues to make this understandable and could really pull this, you know, turn this around. Because like I said, the
4 issues are 5. I was
maybe 4 or 5.
Five.
Maybe it's 5. Could be. Okay. I don't remember off the top of my head. But
pretty sure it was 5, but yeah.
But you know, the art, I really like the art. It's just some of the storytelling was a little cryptic. So, you know, 3 out of 5, decent. And especially given that it was free, you know, or even, you know, hell, I'd pay a quarter, you know, or 30 cents or whatever DCBS started charging with issue 3. You know, it's certainly worth that, you know.
Yeah.
It's a decent comic. And again, by the end of the story arc, hopefully we'll get a little more tied together picture of this world.
Would be nice. And again, like you said, the free price goes a long way. I mean, hopefully this will get some people to check it out that wouldn't have otherwise, maybe even get them hooked on the series. So, excellent experiment.
I'd like to see more things like that. You know, because it really is taking people who like the variant covers and having those people help fund their, which essentially what this is it's a marketing campaign for, you know, getting these books out and read, and they have now the hope that in like 100 pages or so of story to be able to really grab somebody in and have them be buying the ongoing series. And if, you know, given 100 pages, if you can't bring somebody into your world, you're not going to, right?
Yeah,
they have that. They have a much larger opportunity than they normally would have. And, you know, people who like the variants and the other incentives, I mean, they get a deal too. And like you pointed out, I think they did a very cool thing with, you know, the variants even for the comic shops where, you know, being able to get those variants and sell the variants essentially for the comic shop pays for them to, you know, pays for their quarter a copy.
Yeah, I think they handled the crowdsourcing approach to it very well, and I'm looking forward to, again, seeing how that, if it's successful enough that they do it again. Because, yeah, interesting experiment, and so far, they seem to be doing well with it. So
very good.
So I read a few other things. The only thing I really want to comment on, I guess, is I got the final issue of Uncanny X-Men after 20 issues, it's over. Which is, again, just kind of funny. My opinion of the Marvel Now is still being colored by the fact they're replacing titles that are a year or two or three old. I'm liking a lot of what I'm reading now. I'm thinking when we get the Marvel Now, I'm still going to like it. You know, we'll see. I think if there's anything else that really jumped out at me this month.
I read the Valiant books, which, again, continue. The Harbinger issue was really good.
Don't talk about XO. I haven't got...
I won't say anything other than I really enjoyed the issue. You know, it's the second part. You know, Ninjak was in the first one, so there's more Ninjak and XO. It was really well done. I think you'll enjoy it.
When I get it.
Our Harbinger. Oh, that's okay. And then Harbinger, really good. This series called Lookouts, which is kind of a fantasy book, you know, kind of set in like a fantasy world, but it's like... kind of like they have Boy Scouts, you know, they're going to grow up to be Rangers in the fantasy campaign. That's a really well done series. It's issue number 2 of that. Walking Dead 103. I really enjoyed their kind of building to something there. Knights of the Dinner Table, Before Watchmen, Minutemen number 4 was a very strong issue. You know, just some good stuff came out this week. I haven't gotten to everything, but I got to those.
Cool. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
That'll do it. Join us next week when we discuss Red Lanterns number 13 from DC, Invincible Iron Man number 527 from Marvel, and Hero Worship number 4 from Avatar Press.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.